Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world horrified that Shohei Ohtani is going to go play in Saudi Arabia next year for $800 million. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Ohtani and Neymar together at last. Who says no?
A lot of questions. Where would his geographic preferences be? What is he really looking for in as a team? Does he want to win? Does he care about the money? Well, at some point, Jake, the money does talk, and off he goes to the Saudi Soccer League. They want him to play soccer, actually.
Yeah, forget LA, forget Chicago, Seattle, San Francisco. He's going to Riyadh, Jordan.
Yep. Can't wait to watch those games. Jake, we're back. We're podcasting back again. This is Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jordan Schusterman. That's Jake Mintz. I'm Jordan Schusterman. I'm now married. That is a thing that happened this weekend. We are going to talk about that first because it's our podcast, and that's what I want to talk about first because I'm still basking in the afterglow of your incredible speech and so many great moments from this weekend. So obviously, we're going to recap my wedding, which of course everybody wants to hear about. And then the second half of the show, we're gonna talk about baseball because we haven't talked about baseball in a timely manner in over a week. And that is a long time in 2023 Jake and Jordan standards.
Correct. Look, Jordan, you only get married once, so you got to talk about it.
Except for the people that, you know, get married more than one time. But I intend to get married just once, and so I am still certainly savoring it.
I would argue that most people are intending to get married just once when they get married, but I'm not trying to be a downer. Your wedding was quite an enjoyable time. It's funny, right? Because from the outside, I would imagine that when people are like, oh, the Suspense Family Barbecue guy got married, like, was it baseball themed? No, it was not.
No.
Wore a t-shirt.
Yeah, there were some, you know, of course, some references here and there, and certainly some baseball people, including producer Chris, who we're going to bring in a second, because he played a very pivotal role in not just this podcast, but also the production of the wedding. But yes, Jake, it was a wonderful time. And as you said, right, it's like easy to assume that, but it was a combination of maybe those, but then also the people that have known us or followed us for a long time. A lot of people who listen to this podcast, but also people who have worked with us. Some of the people like our great friend, Gemma Kaneko, who is one of our earliest kind of friends and supervisors and mentors in this baseball industry when we got hired right out of college in 2017. You know, she was there and she was like, these are incompetent children. You know, why is Jordan, you know, getting married? That's crazy. But
right,
fortunately by now, you know, we have grown up a good amount and it didn't feel like a goofy thing. It was just like, oh yeah, like now they're just older and they're still the same, but they can get married now and that's cool.
Very rarely do you have an opportunity or a reason to stop and smell the roses and to take stock of where you are and how you got there. Mm-hmm. And your wedding was an opportunity to do that. And it was very fulfilling and meaningful to have that chance.
Yes. Now, I will say that it was great. And of course, Jake played a huge role, gave a fantastic speech, which not everybody gets to hear. That's not the point.
Sorry.
We do enough talking with microphones, okay, recorded on task cams. This did not need to be that.
It ain't all content, baby. It ain't all for you.
Trust me. A lot of it's content. That did not need to be content. So thank you again, Jake, for that wonderful speech. But producer Chris needs to come in here. Because I need to tell a story here about the lead up to this wedding. First of all, Chris, it's great to see you. I mean, obviously, we spent a lot of time with you this weekend, but how are you? You made it home. You're doing well.
Met at home, good. It was a long trip back on Monday morning, but we got there and we're back into the swing of things now. So all good.
Amazing. So just to give everyone some context, so you know, I invited about 150 people to my wedding. There were about 110 there, and obviously, a philosophical question about weddings is, oh, kids, like should kids be there? Like, do you want to? Some people are just like, no, I don't want any kids running around screaming, whatever. Because my lovely wife, why I'm a wife guy now, Bailey, she had a lot of little cousins between the ages of like 5 to 10 that ended up being, you know, stars on the dance floor. And that was great. But we had some other friends who wanted to bring their kids, including Chris, or wanted to know if they could, you know, bring their kids. And Chris was one of them. And in the months leading up to the wedding, Chris expressed so much gratitude that kids were going to be allowed and that he could bring his adorable daughter, Izzy, who we had never met before. But we'd heard about this cute daughter, Izzy.
One and a half, Chris? She's one and a half?
Almost two next month.
two next month, right? So, and so all the week, and even over the weekend, because Chris was there on Friday, and he kept saying, oh, thank you, God. And his lovely wife, Juliana, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much for letting us bring Izzy. We couldn't, it's so, and we're like, yeah, of course, like, it's more of a hassle for you than for me, but like, whatever. Like, as far as we were concerned, if it made Chris happy, it made us happy, right? But then to go from Chris thanking us to by the end of Sunday evening, at the end of the party, us thanking Chris, because I mean this when I say this, Chris, the wedding would have been objectively worse had you not brought your incredible daughter.
It was
an all-time turn of events.
The reason that we're leading the podcast with this, I understand that most of you were not there at Jordan's wedding. In fact, almost all of you. The performance by Chris's two-year-old daughter on the dance floor was one of the most remarkable athletic achievements I have ever seen in my entire life.
Shohei-like, really.
It was like, it, as far as physical stamina and like pound for pound, just performance, again, this, it's one thing. It's like, oh, wow, she's a great baby. She doesn't cry. She is like funny, cute and smiles. No. She was dancing for 3 straight hours.
The baby did not leave the dance floor. Listen, everyone, the baby, she's 2. She did. I'm not overreacting here. Okay. Yeah. I like to boogie. I'm on the dance floor a lot. The baby did not leave the dance floor.
She had
for
the
3
most,
hours.
The most, like, you know, if we were most time on the field, most minutes played, right? Like, if this was an NBA game, she only subbed out for probably 30 seconds. This was like LeBron in the Eastern Conference Finals. Like, it was an unbelievable performance, Chris, truly.
And then we had to literally drag her kicking and screaming away from the dance floor at like 9:30. She was showing no signs of slowing down. There was a brief period of about 5 minutes at maybe 8:45 where she started rubbing her eyes a little bit, but then she got the second wind and she was going strong after
that. And then you told us, Chris, that when you got back to the room, it was that's when she got a little cranky because it was
fell asleep in the car on the way back, which was nice. And then we got to our hotel room and as soon as we opened that door and she saw her bed, she's like, whoa. Ooh. What's going on? She was pissed.
The other dynamic here that I loved, Chris probably knew the least amount of people at Jordan's wedding.
He's up there. Yeah. Up there on most strangers for him.
Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know who else he had met besides like on a Zoom call, mm-hmm. besides the two of us. Right. Mm-hmm. And so he was probably rolling into this wedding with a little bit of hesitation. Like, am I going to meet people? How do I introduce myself? And the wedding ended with his daughter as the absolute star of the wedding.
Everyone was wanting pictures. Like,
it was crazy.
Like, oh, hey, can I get a picture with Izzy?
Like, it was the perfect icebreaker. It was the perfect way into every single conversation that I had for the entire night. It was perfect.
It was great. It was great. So, Chris, thank you. Thank you to you and your amazing family for joining us. It really, really made a difference. The other, of course, any final thoughts on that, Chris?
I will say, because I've never been a dancer, right? I do not like dancing. I have barely spent any time on a dance floor, even at weddings. Your wedding was the most amount of time I've spent on a dance floor out of any other time in my life combined.
Well,
and it was because of Izzy, because of how much of a issue was.
Your daughter was looking at you like, oh my God, come on, Dad, you freaking loser. Get out of here.
And who would have thought it took me having a two-year-old daughter to actually become a dancer?
Not even two.
Not even anyway. Two next month.
Izzy MVP. Okay, so that's that. Now, the other thing, of course, people are probably wondering, well, Mariners Orioles. All right, well, you guys talked about it last week. How many Mariners Orioles innings are you going to watch? And I got to say, and I tweeted this, it was not really inaccurate. Like, I was not just making a joke. It actually worked out perfectly because Friday night I got to watch the return of Kevin Brown and the Mariners kick ass. It was great. I was in a great mood. All was well. We got to watch some of it with some of our other baseball friends.
Quick Kevin Brown thing. Orioles broadcaster sent into purgatory by John Angelos. Kevin then went and tweeted what looked like a hostage. I think Michael Kay called it a hostage video, right? I'm not going to jump into it all the way, but like, I hope that if you're listening to this show, you are smart enough to look at what Kevin tweeted and understand the truth is all I'm going
to
say.
Yes. And also, but still, obviously, he was just happy to be back and we were all happy to have him back. And for the Orioles to get embarrassed on Friday was great. But then two dramatic wins, two extra inning wins on Saturday and Sunday. I didn't see a second of them, and that was for the best.
Love
it. Because the Mariners bullpen, which has continued to have some struggles this week against a terrible team in Kansas City, it was not good. But I was glad, you know, the Orioles didn't get swept. They ended up winning the series. All was well there. But the, you know, the Cedric Mullins catch, I ended up seeing the highlights later. It was a great series by all accounts. Like, there were some neutrals that were tweeting after the fact, like, that, what an incredible series. But I enjoyed it. And Felix, of course, getting inducted to the Hall of Fame, his speech, seeing Adrian Beltre come out, seeing everything that he's outstanding. Obviously my favorite player. He's the reason I'm a Mariners fan. But so that was cool. I was very excited about that. I was wondering with Felix, is he the youngest player to go into a team Hall of Fame? That was a topic we'd maybe do some research on that, but it feels like he probably was. But either way, that was obviously very cool to see and certainly helped me enjoy the weekend, regardless of the Mariners' losses.
Which speech had you more emotional, Jordan, mine or Felix Hernandez's?
Yeah, if I had to power rank yours, of course, my sister's incredible poem, my brother and my parents and Bailey's parents. It was so many to choose from. But I mean, you had a little bit more personal touches.
Suck it, Felix.
Than Felix did. Not his fault. It was all great. So anyway, that was the BBQ Bowl. And just quickly, Jake, like, our teams are in some pretty interesting spots right now. I know the Orioles got kind of embarrassed last night. We had a James McCann pitching appearance. But in general, they still look like one of the best teams. Grayson Rodriguez looks incredible. That's been a huge development.
Right.
And now Mullins is back, and it's really all starting to click.
The last month of this Orioles season, the last month and a half, is really about solidifying the postseason pitching rotation. And solidifying is maybe the wrong word. It is discovering. It is uncovering, unearthing who the hell is going to start these games. Because if you had asked me a month and a half ago who would start these games, it would probably be a totally different answer than it would be now. Because Tyler Wells was like a borderline all-star, and since then he's gotten space jammed, right? He's in AAA. And I would say today you have to give one of the starts to Kyle Bradish because he's been their best pitcher. Mm-hmm. I think you have to give another one of the starts. Huh. See, this is the thing. It's already
hard,
like,
if you're looking, if you're looking at the full season numbers, it's really challenging, right? And the other X factor, and I'm not sure exactly the status, is John Means.
Correct.
Now, I don't know exactly if that is he going to get back in time to look great and then just get one of the first few starts. Probably not, but
imagine he's on the roster to give bulk like an inning or three innings of work. I don't think he's going to be able to start a game. Maybe he will. Who knows? But yeah, Kyle Gibson, Dean Kremer, Kyle Bradish, Tyler Wells, Grayson Rodriguez, Cole Irvin, and John Means. Jack Flaherty.
I was going to say, right? Who just got blasted last night.
He got blasted last night. I would imagine Flaherty ends up with one of the starts.
I would hope so. I mean, that's one where it's like, I mean, I guess not. Like, at some point, you have to, it's not just a PR thing. Like, this is the guy we traded for. He has to start. Like, if he keeps getting blasted, he might not be one of the three best options. But to your point, I think we know the mix, but the order could be, now it might not. Although at the same time, maybe they're so far ahead that they have the ability to set up the rotation.
Correct.
And that's what's interesting.
The other thing to note is that Grayson Rodriguez, friend of the show.
He's figuring it out.
Figuring it out, everybody. He is figuring it out. He has been outstanding. His ERA over the season is still 5.44, but don't let that distract you. If you watch the starts since he got called up on July 17th, he's been really good. 3.03 ERA over that time, an opponent OPS of 5.17, 30 strikeouts in 35 innings.
Yeah, it's interesting because the strikeouts still haven't really been there, but the stuff looks incredible. He's throwing way harder than he was his first time around.
The changeup and the slider are just crisper. He credited it to the heat. He was like, I'm used to pitching in like Texas mugginess, gross.
That makes humidity. Some sense.
I feel looser. And he was like, yeah, it was cold. And it's like, that's good. But also like, bro, you're going to be cold for a while.
When it matters again. That's true. So we'll have to get some lucky draws and maybe some favorable global warming for Grayson.
But here's what's going to happen, okay? Grayson Rodriguez is going to start game two or game three of a playoff series. And his ERA, when he does that, is going to be ugly over the full season. And probably, people are going to be like, this is the best thing the Orioles have. And you got to dig into the game logs, my dear friends, because Grayson has really figured some things out.
Well, and it's that, and just like, if you didn't know any of the pitcher's numbers and you just watched every Orioles pitcher for six innings, like, he would,
you'll get it.
He would be the guy, right? I mean, Bradish has been really good. And I think Bradish is the one, assuming he's healthy, will be a lock for one of those first two starts. But it is interesting how they choose to decide to mix in the veterans like Gibson, like Flaherty, like Means. And then if Wells can somehow reemerge because of how good he was over the first. But Wells is the kind of guy where there's just interesting risk involved with all of them. Now, obviously, if you're one of the best offenses in the league, that's how you're going to win games no matter what. But it is a fascinating subplot for these last couple months, because they obviously have a comfortable lead in the division. They've won all these games and they're clearly a great team with a great offense. But they'll have to figure that out one way or the other.
How are you feeling about the Mariners right now as we continue the bias ball tilt? They are 7-3 in their last 10. They are 7.5 back in the division. That feels a little far gone now, but only two games out in the wild card as we speak behind Toronto.
Yeah. I mean, they had won. They won, what was it, 8 in a row? Was that Friday night win was a W8, I believe. And so I couldn't have been feeling much better after Friday. And then since then, you've just started to see a very hilarious collapse of the bullpen with everybody getting mad about Paul Sewald being gone, but also like the emergence of Dom Canzone and Josh Rojas at the same time. But really, it's been, well, the reason why they've been playing better is because the whole offense, Julio has been tremendous. And then the weird wrinkle that kind of showed up in the last few days is J.P. Crawford's concussion, which that happened on Friday, where he ran into Eugenio Suarez on a weird grounder. And now he's been out. And he's really been the heart and soul. But not just heart and soul. I mean, he's been the most productive player for them all season. So him being out has certainly made the lineup and just everything feel a little off. And they've played just these horrible games. They've been bailed out these last. I know they lost one of the games, but Kansas City's pitching, oh my God. I mean, not that this is news, but really watching it and seeing them bring in these guys in these high leverage spots. And duh, we know that they didn't have much to begin with and they traded away Barlow, whatever. That's just like, there's no way they'd be losing these games so badly against teams with remotely competent pitching staffs. They have to keep taking advantage. They're going to be in the mix. The pitching's still been great. I'm glad that they're really in there, and I think they've proven that they belong, but it's still some maddening inconsistency.
I want to put this energy into the universe, Jordan. Mm-hmm. Give me a second.
Do it, please.
The Orioles have the best record in the American League. If the season ended today, they would be the number one seed. The Mariners, two games out from the final wild card. Let's say they get the sixth seed, okay? Who would they play in that first round? The Minnesota Twins, a team that's not very good, relatively.
The team
relatively
that hasn't won a playoff game in 2020.
Correct. Correct. If the Mariners win that series at first. Now, this is a lot. I understand this is a lot.
It's not that much. I mean, it's not that hard to picture.
Yeah. Mariners win that first round series against the Twins. Who are they playing in the ALDS? The Baltimore Orioles.
We're getting greedy, but it's not.
We're getting greedy, but it is as close to reality as it has ever been in our friendship.
Totally.
In our lives. Well, not in our lives. I guess they did play in the ALDS in the late 90s, I believe.
Right.
But dude, if we have O's Mariners ALDS, how are we handling that?
What are we doing? There's so many levels to that. There's so many levels to that. How are we handling that personally? How are we handling that professionally? How are we handling that emotionally? There's so many questions that are going to be involved in that. But I will say that for a while when we had been dreaming of this, everyone is like, who cares? But after this weekend, everyone was like, oh, hell yeah. Like, I would love to watch this, these two teams in the postseason. So it makes me feel a little bit better that the neutral observers would also be excited to see this matchup in the postseason, which I agree with. And so that I think that that's cool. I think that there's real reasons for compelling parts of this matchup. So we will see. We will see what happens. It'll be a fun stretch. But I am just glad, even with their maddening performance in the last few days, that they are clearly good enough to be in the mix down to the end. And maybe that is where we are heading. All right, Jake.
Before we take a quick break,
yes,
let's talk about Wander Franco.
Let's do that as succinctly and concisely as we can. Of course, this was clearly the biggest news in baseball over the weekend. We did not want to start that the show with that, but of course we are going to address it.
Well, also, as early as we can. Mm-hmm. It trickled out on Sunday during your wedding.
Yes.
And so for us, the flow of information was even more odd because we were just not on our phones at all for eight hours.
It was definitely not the news I was any kind of news I was looking forward to seeing when I returned to my cellular device. But yes, Jake, I mean, as we sit here today on Wednesday, the latest that we know and understand is that Wander Franco has been placed on the restricted list due to an investigation surrounding a potentially inappropriate relationship with a minor. This is reports that kind of came up, bubbled on social media over the weekend, and then obviously has been verified or at least concerning enough to a degree that the league and, of course, the Rays are cooperating with an investigation into the matter. There is not really much more to be said for multiple reasons. One, because this is obviously extremely upsetting and disturbing, and like the, all those things are obvious. But also, this is an ongoing investigation, and there's so much that we don't know about this to where there's not much more to add other than Wander Franco is not playing right now and might not be playing for quite some time.
Correct. And this situation is pretty complicated because it involves two different countries.
Yep.
As well, this is, I believe, from The Athletic, the media office of the Dominican Republic Attorney General's office said that there are investigations regarding the situation down there, mm-hmm. right? And so if there's an investigation there and there are charges there or there are charges here, it creates such a complicated web of events. And so, like, we don't know shit besides what anybody else knows. And talking to people around the game is like, no one else knows shit either. Mm-hmm. So this is not a situation where that many people have information. Mm-hmm. So I would not expect details to flow out anytime soon. Obviously. This is going to take a while. Yep. I would be surprised if he plays this season. Mm-hmm. I would be pretty shocked. Mm-hmm. It is just, I mean, like, it's deplorable.
Yep.
You know, it is a deplorable thing. The power imbalance present in any type of relationship like that, like, we don't need to explain that on this podcast.
Yep. And so we are going to let the professional reporters and people who are certainly going to be tracking this a lot more closely and carefully kind of take the lead here, because
correct.
It is not responsible to really jump any further than that. But absolutely. It's not like, listen, we knew we were going to come on here and acknowledge it, but there's not a whole lot more to add from where correct. We sit today.
And, like, you know, I was asking around about it yesterday just because I was curious. Mm-hmm. And one person was like, are you writing about this? And I was like, no. I was like, I think we've grown as reporters in the last couple of years, mm-hmm. but not on this, man. Like, I had to say, tell someone, like, I do not feel qualified. Maybe nope. I got to go back to J school. But, like, nope. You can leave this to Ken.
There will be a lot of people that will, of course, be reporting out the stories. So we encourage you to trust those sources and trust that reporting. But until then, we're gonna kind of stay off and acknowledge it. And we will move on.
You're not listening to the Baseball Barbacast for unique investigative reporting. Sorry. And no. We will not be providing that to you anytime soon. No. All right, so Jordan,
it's obviously a big story, and we will address it as we see fit in the future. But for now, we are going to take a quick break. And when we return, there's a lot of other baseball kept happening. They didn't put on pause for my wedding. So a lot to catch up on. And we're going to do that right after this break.
This is former PGA Tour winner Smiley Kaufman, host of The Smiley Show, a SiriusXM podcast. You want to know what I love about golf? I get to talk to some really cool people. I get to walk the fairways of the best courses in the world with the best players in the world, and I get to share it with you every single week. Listen to The Smiley Show right now on Stitcher, Pandora, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's Smiley, S-M-Y-L-I-E.
And we're back here on Baseball Barbacast. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. No more wedding chat. Let's talk ball. The Los Angeles Dodgers have won 9 games in a row consecutively. So, like, they won, then they won again, and they won again, and then they did that whole thing 3 additional times, if that makes sense.
Another one. The Dodgers have had, I would, I mean, this is sort of just math because of how many wins they've had in the regular season over the last, you know, decade, but they rattle off 5 and 6 gamers so casually to where when you see the W6 in the column of the standings with the Dodgers, it doesn't even like register. It's like, oh yeah, of course. But 9 is where like you really have my attention, because now it's not just that the Dodgers have convinced us that once again they're the best team in the NL West. It's that the Dodgers have re-entered the conversation for one of the very few best teams in baseball. And it's still interesting because on offense, it is starting to get more balanced. Mike Petriello wrote a great thing recently about how Mookie and Freddie Freeman are currently in the argument for the greatest 1-2, literally like batting first, batting second, that we've ever seen in terms of an individual season. An OPS plus, they are right up there with any spots that we've ever seen, or since like the Big Red Machine, basically. And that's true, but they are still getting some more contributions on offense. But the pitching is still a bit of a mishmash, but it is coming together enough to where it is starting to resemble a Dodgers team that we know. I will say that it is not quite, while it is a lot of the same names that we've seen in the postseason, obviously Kershaw, Urias, Gonsolin, their numbers still don't look like a juggernaut pitching staff, but it is starting to feel still like the Dodgers are. Now, I still think the Braves are way better, but they still look clearly good enough to be in position to win 100 games again, which, by the way, is incredible. And if not, go on another deep run in October.
It feels like 3 weeks ago during the deadline, the conversation about the Dodgers pitching staff was, who's starting in October? Mm-hmm. It felt like it was going to be me, you, Mr. Magoo, and a broken Clayton Kershaw taking the ball when the weather got cold. Not in LA. Doesn't get cold in LA. Over the last couple of weeks since the deadline, after they failed to get Eduardo Rodriguez to bolster a rotation that they thought needed help, Julio Urias has been great. Bobby Miller has started to figure things out. Lance Lynn looks rejuvenated for the Dodgers. And Tony Gonsolin has been closer to, his usual midness than being horrible. And like that might be enough. And Kershaw's back. So it's like Urias, Miller, Lynn, and Kershaw is a postseason rotation. That's it. Great. Okay. Oh, you have Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman. Well, fuck. They're the Dodgers.
Yep. Also, Ryan Yarbrough, who I was adamant that was not an insignificant acquisition, has delivered 3 outings of 4 innings, 3 innings, 3 innings, and allowed 2 total runs. He's looked great. That's exactly the kind of guy that they basically admitted like he was the pivot when they didn't get Erod. And I thought that was a great pivot because I think that he's exactly the kind of guy that can succeed there.
That's what no speed do.
Yeah. And by the way, that's awesome. I'm freaking amped for Ryan Yarbrough. Ryan Yarbrough is basically the pitching version of what has happened with Nicky Lopez in Atlanta, where you're getting the Willy Wonka golden ticket off the worst team in the league to go to one of the best teams in the league. Like that is, and now is balling out, right? Like that is one of the other cool elements of the trade deadline. So the Dodgers are looking great. And then the other big news with them over the weekend is that they made a big signing. It's a big signing. It's the middle of August. Like what are you talking about? Well, there's a Korean right-handed pitcher named Hyun-Suk Jang, a guy who was slated to probably be the number one pick in the KBO draft coming up here. But Korean high schoolers do have the option to just sign with MLB teams. And we've seen guys like G-Man Choi who skipped, the KBO. And some guys, of course, go to KBO and then they sign for more later. But there are players that are, especially recently, like more than good enough to sign straight out of high school in Korea. And this has been one of the more talented right-handed pitchers that we've seen in some time. Dodgers get him for $900,000. There was some reporting after I saw an interview on Rob Bradford's podcast with the Asia Pacific scout that signed him, which is basically that like he could have gotten more money if he waited a few more months to go to another team. And he's like, no, I'm going to sign with the Dodgers because duh, why wouldn't I sign with the Dodgers? $900,000 is still plenty. And now he can enter pro ball sooner. And I'm sure he'll be a top 100 prospect in 18 months. So that's a really exciting development for them, of course. And not that he's going to impact their postseason rotation, but it is just a good reminder of why the best organizations continue to be good, because good players want to be on their team at all levels of the organization.
Part of that is the prestige over the last half century. Part of that is they are better at development than anybody else. And part of it is having players like Hyunjin Ryu, who was probably kicking people's ass with the Dodgers when this guy was like 10. And yes. He probably watched a lot of the Dodgers growing up and always wanted to play for them. It's not that complicated. Let's drive up the coast, Jordan, to San Francisco, where the Giants have called up one of the more interesting players in the minor leagues to their big league club, Wade Mekler. I'm going to just say it again. Wade Mekler, M-E-C-K-L-E-R. What makes Wade Mekler such an interesting cat?
So you might have seen the basic fun fact that this guy, this 23-year-old outfielder, went from A-ball to the big leagues this season. He started the year in high A, Eugene, and hit 456 in 20 games. He was promoted to Double-A Richmond, where he hit 336. What a bum. Promoted to Triple-A Sacramento, hits 400 over 10 games, and is now in the big leagues. Now, the thing is normally it is really hard to do this as a hitter. Really, really hard. Now, we have seen teams more recently be a little bit more aggressive with their assignments. Obviously, that normally is with guys. It's interesting because either it's with the phenoms, right? The Jackson Holidays, the Jackson Churios, the Acuñas, whatever. Get them into A-ball when they're 16, 17, 18, and then they're so good and then they just fly. You know their generational talents. Or it happens with older players because they're already older for the level. And when Wade Mekler was in AIA, he was 23 or basically 23, and he was old for the level. And so once he's hitting 450, it's like, well, listen, he already is old for the level. Let's go. And he's already about level age appropriate at Double-A. So in some cases, when they're old and they're proving it, it's like, okay, well, we can move him along because this is where he should be. But this is the most extreme example I've ever seen. The fact that he is a hitter, an eighth rounder from last year's draft as a college guy to get to the big leagues, only the fourth guy from the 2022 draft, and the first that's not an Angel, and that should really tell you all you need to know. Ironically, Wade Mekler from Anaheim. But yes, Wade Mekler is now in the big leagues. And you were asking a few people around the game around him yesterday about a comp that is fairly obvious, and I kind of wanted to talk about that. So why don't you introduce that, and then I'll add a few more thoughts.
Okay, so Wade Mekler, undersized. He's listed at 5'10", 178. I'll hammer the under on both of those, I think. Maybe not 178, but I'll hammer the under on 5'10". He is ginger, which is not important, but is relevant when you look at him. And he has a very odd... he's got red facial hair, and it's bushy.
It's a strange balance of hair.
He looks like he belongs in a Brooklyn coffee shop and not center field at Oracle Park.
He looks like a wild thornberry.
Like a wild thornberry.
Wow. The dad in wild thornberries. Like that's what he will look like in 30 years. But yeah, he looks kind of like a thornberry.
Yo, that's an unbelievable call. Wade Mekler looks like Nigel Thornberry. Yes. Incredible spot. Yes. Anyway, he's an interesting player because he went to Oregon State and he's small and he makes a lot of contact. And it's, you know, people, Stephen Kwan. It's Stephen Kwan. However, no one is Stephen Kwan and no one is Wade Mekler except for Wade Mekler. No one is Stephen Kwan except for Stephen Kwan. However, I did ask Stephen Kwan yesterday about Wade Mekler. And I was like, yo, I know you didn't overlap at all, but have you met Wade Mekler? And he was like, so we overlapped for 1 year because Wade Mekler redshirted his first year at Oregon State when Kwan was a junior. So they spent a lot of time together, undersized outfielders with not a lot of pop in 2018. And then Kwan spent a couple off seasons in Corvallis hitting with Mekler. And so it's like, yes, Wade Mekler, this is the correct guy to be around. If you are undersized, you don't have a whole lot of raw pop, be around Stephen Kwan and you will learn a lot about how to hit the baseball. Wade Mekler, I'm so interested in this dude because he does not look like a big leaguer. He does not look like a baseball player. He's very, like the kind word is cerebral. He seems like a dork in an awesome way that we like. You described it as like hitter Spencer Strider from a vibe perspective.
And there's a good video, I think that his agency posted, just a little clip of like him in the cage kind of just talking about his hitting approach and just like what he's trying to do and whatever. And it literally just as fast sounds like Strider, where he has decided. And now here's why that's especially relevant to his story. Now, I know Stephen Kwan similarly didn't play a lot as a freshman, but was amazing as a sophomore and a junior. But Wade Mechler was cut from the team. Wade Mechler was on the team in 19 and was cut by the new coach, Mitch Canham. They said, we don't have a spot for you. You should go transfer. And in 2020, he was not on the team. And he decided, no, I'm not leaving. Like, I am going to be on the team at some point. You will let me be on the team. 21, he does make the team. He's pretty good. And then as a senior in 2022, he basically had the same season that Stephen Kwan had as a junior. Eerily similar, like shockingly similar triple slash lines with a ton of walks and a ton. And but the biggest difference between Kwan and Mechler is that Mechler does have a notch of grade power above Kwan. And not quite the same, like, never ever strikes out, but similar enough. I mean, obviously has incredible contact and walks a lot, but it's a little bit more power, a little bit less, you know, unbelievable contact ability. But it, obviously, you just look at the numbers, and it's an incredible amount of balls in play. Obviously, he's not striking out a lot, and he's playing center, which I know Kwan is now more of a fantastic left fielder. But Mechler, the fact that they've been putting Mechler out in center in San Francisco, I think says a lot about what they think about him as a defender. So this is just the latest in what is a kind of a new wave of Giants players. We have not talked nearly enough about Patrick Bailey. Holy shit, he has been fantastic, unbelievable defensively. He had a walk-off homer over the weekend. But this next wave of Giants players is exciting, and this is what we really haven't seen in these recent kind of iterations of the veteran Giants hitting lab, whatever. Like, these are the fun players that you kind of want to see be a part of that next core, as opposed to the veterans who are just like rejuvenating, like JD Davis. So really fun player. Obviously, I think he will be an obvious fan favorite, and I'm excited for people to get to know him the person more. I'm excited to get to know him the person more in the coming months.
One more big topic, literally big. First overall pick, Paul Skeens of the Pittsburgh Pirates, made his real debut last night. He had pitched an inning in the complex, but that's not baseball. That's just pickup. So he went to the Bradenton Marauders yesterday, and he got the start, and he threw one inning, and that was it. And all he was really good. He threw really hard.
Well, let's talk about Paul Skeens quickly in terms of just
the conversation.
Yeah, well, especially because he goes 1-1. You know, Dylan Cruz, his teammate, has been insanely ridiculously good, of course, with the Nats so far. All kinds of philosophical discussions. How good does a pitching prospect have to be worth taking 1-1? And Skeens was deemed that because he was considered the best pitching prospect since Strasburg and Gerrit Cole, whatever. But just, I know it's been two innings, but what, like, how do you think this is going to go? I don't, obviously, with the Pirates sucking, it's not like they're rushing to the big leagues this year. Maybe we see him at Double A by the end of the season. Who knows? But like, what do you expect this to look like until he gets to the big leagues?
So, the conversation with Skeens, the doubters, it's about the fastball. So, which is insane to say about someone sitting 99 to 100, right? However, it's like, does the fastball have enough other qualities to play in the zone, to get swings and misses in the zone, if the velocity falls into like the 96, 97 range? Because we have really never seen a starter other than Jacob DeGrom hold that type of velocity for multiple years at a time. We really have not.
Yeah,
Noah Syndergaard did it for a couple years, and Hunter Green has done it over the last two, but he's been hurt.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. He's been hurt for a lot of that,
yeah,
which tells you what it's like to throw.
Yeah, I mean, the Green one's weird because he's about to come back, you know, next week. He's had a hip injury this year. But yeah, right. In general, it's a short list.
And it's a weird example, Hunter Green, because the fastball has played a little bit below its velocity level. And so if you are low on Skeens, that would be why. Now, we saw some of that in the pitch data last night. It was a little bit below. He didn't get knocked around. I mean, he threw one inning and allowed one hit and struck out two, right? Mm-hmm. But that's just where I just want people to understand, like, that's the skepticism. Now, the flip side of that is that you have a 6'7 mountain of a man who is outrageously powerful, was throwing 100 miles an hour in college without a pro pitching development plan, okay, who's athletic enough to make any type of adjustments that he needs to be successful moving forward. Yeah. And that the breaking stuff and the command is good enough to project success, even if the velocity dips into like the 96 to 98 range.
And that's the thing, because in college, when he was only throwing every 6 or 7 days, I mean, he was holding it, right? He was pumping 100 on pitch 100. But it's a little different, of course, when you're going every 5 days. There's going to be outings when in the minors when he gets blasted for a few homers. That was happening in the SEC. But that is the risk of the fastball, is that at some point the hitters you're facing in the professional ranks are so good that it doesn't matter that you're throwing 100. If it doesn't have the right characteristics, they can hit it a long way because they can time that shit up. But again, you're taking Paul Skenes not just because it's, oh, big guy throws hard. It's because you're betting on basically everything else involved with him,
right,
which I totally understand.
And we saw a little bit of that yesterday. He threw one pitch, 96 or 97, that had a ton more sink than we're used to seeing from him. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, oh, well, if he learns a new pitch, he's talented enough that he could just throw something nuts. What happens with him moving forward? He's going to throw like 20 innings this year. He probably won't leave Bradenton. I'd be surprised.
Yeah.
Because they just probably want to keep him on the complex there. That's fine. He'll stay in Bradenton. The Pirates are in New York right now, and I asked a bunch of their beat writers yesterday. Odds he breaks camp. Everyone said zero. I would imagine some of that has to do with a little bit of service time finagling. Some of that is just because they don't need to, and he might not be ready. He legit might not be ready, but I would expect him to be in the big leagues at some point next year.
Yeah.
However, enough about Paul Skenes, the pitcher. Let's talk about Paul Skenes, the event. Because Paul Skenes was not the most famous individual at the Bradenton Marauders game last night. Because social media sensation and LSU gymnast Livy Dunn came down to Bradenton, Florida to support her fellow LSU Tiger, Paul Skenes. Now, if you are unfamiliar with Olivia Dunn, Jordan, how would you explain Olivia Dunn to your mom?
I mean, it's not you kind of hit the only things we need to know, right? I mean, she is a very, very, very famous person on social media who has done better at kind of cultivating a following through TikTok than I guess anybody, any other athletes, I would say. Of course, there's other people that have done it, and it's not complicated, right? I mean, it's just the attractive college athlete, gymnast, duh, right? But
no notes.
The LSU Association has been one that has made it more interesting. She made an appearance in Omaha during LSU's run to the World Series. But for this, as you pointing out, we don't really care about anything that she's ever doing. But if she's going to show up at a game that only had another 1,616 people in attendance, if she was one of 16, 17 to attend a Tuesday evening Florida State League game, we're going to talk about it because this is hilarious and great.
That's fucking funny.
Yes.
She has 4.3 million followers on Instagram. Shohei Ohtani is at 5.8. So Ohtani does have her beat.
But I have to imagine the number of baseball players with more than that is less than 5. Correct. Or less than 10. But either way, I think the funniest part about this is it's like, obviously she's getting mobbed wherever she goes, whatever. That's a whole other podcast discussion. But we think of it like this. But oh, actually, here's a weird comparison. Vanessa Hudgens was at the Brewers game last week.
Yep.
For former Pirates first round pick Cole Tucker, who's now on the Rockies, already been DFA'd. And just like seeing celebrities, and Vanessa Hudgens is, ooh, that's an interesting question. Is Vanessa Hudgens more famous than Livy Dunn?
No.
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, I don't know. That's an interesting one. I don't have a sense for how famous Livy Dunn is like internationally. Whereas Vanessa Hudgens at some point got to the point where it was probably more famous elsewhere. The point is seeing famous people in particularly minor league settings.
That's the thing, dude. That's the thing. Livy Dunn is the most famous college athlete in America, right? And she rolled through a Bradenton Marauders game, okay? And the conversation about whether or not she is dating Paul Skenes is irrelevant to me. It does not matter.
I don't care why she's there. She's there.
Whether they're, playing tonsil hockey or they're in the friend zone is not important. Because
I'm choosing, it's not important, but my favorite version of this is they're like just regular friends and they're just fucking with everybody.
Oh,
that
God,
is probably
right.
Giving them way too much credit, but that would be an all-timer and also like an all-time friend move for her to go to this game, which is so funny because he throws one inning.
That's the thing. So she throws one, he throws one inning. And the fact that she's there, it doesn't matter if they're hooking up or not. Like, she is close enough with him that she is going from LSU, from Baton Rouge, to Bradenton. It is not that easy to get to Bradenton. Like, you have to fly into Sarasota or you fly into Tampa and you drive. Like, it's a bit of a schlep. And there's no way she's staying for that long. And so it's just hilarious that she went to support. Now, if they are together, it is good for Paul Skeens and good for baseball, right? If this is a power couple, we need more baseball power couples.
Yeah, I want. That, obviously, we support that.
We support that. My favorite part of this whole story. Jordan, can you tell me the final score of the Bradenton Marauders Lakeland Flying Tigers game last night?
Well, thank God for the pitch clock because it still clocked in under 3 hours, but it was 14-13. We had 25 combined hits. The Marauders hung on at the end. Furious comeback. The Marauders were up 14-0 after three innings. But then the pen after Skeens just hanging on for dear life as the Flying Tigers came flying back all the way to a one-run close defeat at the end. Marauders making four errors along the way to allow the Tigers to come back. Perhaps she stuck around to see Charles McAdoo collect five RBIs. Perhaps she stuck around to see another SEC legend, Jim Jarvis, score two runs for the Flying Tigers. But probably not. But there is something very funny about Livy, you know, scrolling her phone, seeing how many tens of thousands of followers she got in the last 20 minutes as, you know, the Marauders are making another pitching change. That is just a delightful scene.
So my other, another great part of this is like, if you search Olivia Dunn, Paul Skeens on Google, you get some hilarious, like, in the way that if Otani sneezes, there's an article about it. Livy Dunn is in that realm. And so there are so many fake aggregated articles about her being at the game already.
Perfect.
And the baseball feel in them is negative.
Oh, yeah.
And so I just want to share a couple ones, okay? After supporting rumored boyfriend from 1,042 miles, Olivia Dunn blesses MLB World with a special appearance. MLB World blessed by Olivia Dunn going to Bradenton. And then there's a picture of her at a football game and a picture of Paul Skeens hitting in an LSU uniform, which must have been from the fall, which is incredible because he did not hit in the spring. So that's one. Another great one is from Outkick. It says, Olivia Dunn dating Paul Skeens, new evidence emerges. Evidence emerging is like, it implies reporting and not.
I mean, but you saw where she was sitting, right? Like, are we sure she wasn't, you know, writing some reports? Like,
she could have been scouting.
Or Donnie De Los Santos, who drew three walks last night, you know, a lot of questions about his plate discipline as a prospect, love the tools. She's probably encouraged by that and
correct,
could see him, you know, stick like offensively, like there is another level to his game, I would say. So maybe right, I don't want to assume why she was there. It doesn't matter why she was there. Whether she was seeing if Max Anderson can stick at second base or not, the point is that she was in attendance. And that was hilarious.
Bro Bible, one of my favorite websites.
My homepage.
Yeah, I love Bro Bible. Headline, Paul Skeens threw some nasty pitches while rumored GF Livy Dunn watched him make single A debut.
Here's the thing. Shit like this is the problem. This is the biggest problem. While this is incredible podcast fodder, it is things like this that are keeping Bro Bible alive. And that makes me sad.
I know. So TMZ's got a story on it. Olivia Dunn cheers on rumored BF Paul Skeens at milestone minor league game. Let me say this. Here's your headline. Here's your headline, everybody. And this is the last thing I'll say. It's the headline's easy. Single A? Question mark? Yes. Single? Question mark? Maybe.
Oh, what newspaper is that going in? That's a kind of a strange. I like that though. That's a, see again, Jay could do this job easily. You want to go full TMZ paparazzi? You're ready to pivot.
Outkick, right, give anyway. Me a call.
Yeah. Also, Mitch Jeb, really good. Just wanted to say that on the podcast. Mitch Jeb. I'm just looking at this box score. I'm like, oh, Mitch Jeb, he's a good player. All right, Jake. I think we're going to end this podcast here.
Yeah.
Friday, we will hit some of the other stuff from the week. The Yankees season is all but done. Braves put them in their place. That's been highly entertaining. Corey Seager looking like one of the best players in the world. No surprise there. But we'll hit all that and more on Friday. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for joining me for another episode of Baseball Barbacast, as it is meant to be recorded. Thank you, Chris Tyler, producer Chris. Again, thank you to your lovely family for joining me for my wedding celebration, and also, of course, for producing this podcast. You've been incredible for an incredible producer, and now much more than that. So thank you, sir. And congrats on Wade Mekler, Giants fan, Chris. Yep. Congrats on Wade Mekler. Hope you're excited about him.
It's a good week. It's a good week for me.
It is. It's a very good week for you.
And tune in next week to see if Addison Rae shows up at Tommy Troy's High A debut.
We'll keep an eye on that. But until then, thank you all for listening. You can email us at baseballbarbcast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. Until Friday, enjoy the next 2 days of games, and we'll talk to you very soon.
I heard Dixie D'Amelio is going to pull up at Matt Shaw's South Bend Cubs showdown.
SiriusXM Podcasts.